Tomorrow night on ESPN, it's the Academy Award-winning documentary Free Solo, a look at Alex Honnold's extraordinary climb 3,200 feet up the face of Yosemite's El Capitan without ropes. Free Solo, tomorrow night, 9 Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. And with that, at the top of the hour, we welcome you. Mike Greenberg here in Bristol. Get up on ESPN. We are with you for an hour. Those of you tuning in to see First Take in its usual time, they will be on 1 hour from now for a full 2 hour edition of that program. But we've got a lot of sports news to get to for you in these next 60 minutes. Let's start with Get Up and Go, where baseball commissioner Rob Manfred said he's 100% certain there will be baseball played this summer, though the questions remain as to how many games. MLB currently planning to make a counteroffer to the Players Association's 89-game proposal, and the clock is ticking. Basketball, Woj reporting a number of NBA players have expressed concerns about resuming the season as the NBA and Players Association are working on a plan that would allow players to stay home, meaning not go play in Orlando without consequences. We'll talk more about that in this hour. LeBron James partnering with a collection of black athletes and entertainers to form More Than a Vote, a nonprofit that aims to protect African Americans' voting rights. Trae Young, Kevin Hart, and our own Jalen Rose are among the other stars who are involved. The U.S. Soccer's Board of Directors voted yesterday to repeal a 2017 policy that required national team members to stand for the national anthem. The rule had been created after Megan Rapinoe kneeled in support of Colin Kaepernick. To football, one of the best duos in NFL history is Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski. They are reunited in Tampa looking for a restart. But at this stage, just how good will this dynamic duo be?
You and
this is a Hall of Fame combination.
He's the best tight end to ever play the game.
Tom is the appetizer of the whole meal.
Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski are back together, reforming one of the most productive duos in sports history. And that's not an exaggeration.
Brady throws towards by Rob Gronkowski.
He's an unstoppable rebel force.
They've won 3 Super Bowls together. That's as many titles as Ruth and Gehrig or Kobe and Shaq. It's one more than Lemieux and Yager. It's halfway to Michael and Scottie. In the 9 years they played together in New England, they connected on 78 touchdowns, the most in the NFL in that time, and twice as many as Brady has thrown to anybody else. Frankly, Gronk made Brady the best quarterback in football. With him, on third downs, Brady's QBR was 80. Without him, it was 40. In the red zone, with Gronk, QBR 88. Without him, 47. In the most important parts of the game, Brady was literally twice as effective with Gronkowski as he was without.
That is a personnel issue.
But here's the deal. When this season begins, these two best buddies will be a combined 74 years old. And Gronk is on record estimating he has had 9 surgeries and 20 concussions in his career. So the question is, do they have enough left in the tank to make one more run at a title in Tampa? That's the question. Let's try and get the answer. Diana and Mr. T and D. Wood, I'll start with you. Do you think these two have enough in the tank to lead this team where it wants to go?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think when you look at Rob Gronkowski, you know, this is a guy who's had, an assortment of injuries, whether you're talking about the back, the knee, elbow. But he also took the year off, lost some weight. I think he comes back, you know, rejuvenated, playing in warmer climate, which is, you know, as far as the athlete is concerned, it's much better on the body. And just playing in a different environment, not as rigorous as it was under Coach Belichick. So I think he'll be highly motivated, being surrounded by a lot of elite talent at the skill position. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate, and Tom. And as far as Tom Brady's concerned, listen, I think, you know, this is the best group of skill position guys that he's probably played with in his entire career. A bunch of guys that are like basketball players, so they have a wide catch radius, and I think Tom is going to be in a great situation where his numbers could explode this year.
Diana, what are you hearing about how defensive coordinators around the league are looking at this?
Well, I can tell you Eric Washington, Raheem Morris, Dennis Allen, defensive coordinators in that division, just heard that piece there with 9 surgeries and 20 concussions and shaking their head going, yeah, Gronk was breaking down a lot when we last saw him on the field. So in terms of concern for him being a threat, from what I can gather in my conversations, it's not a high priority. They know that he's vertical, he's long, he's going to run those seams, those out routes. He's not the same player he was, though. As for Tom Brady, the way it was explained to me in terms of slowing him down and stopping him, because, you know, these defensive coordinators, by the way, have taken so much time over the last few weeks to just obsess over the film of Brady, especially during the final half of the season in New England. But it's all about hitting him. It's all about getting him on the ground. He is not as dynamic in the pocket anymore. So in terms of them as a duo, yes, they are still going to be a threat. But this is not the Tom Brady, the Rob Gronkowski that we've seen in years past, according to defensive coordinators I talked to.
Mike T, what is the role you envision for Gronk in Tampa?
Yeah, he's going to be very impactful, third down, red zone. And I understand what Diana said, but maybe I just have too many years of scar tissue. Greatness is defined as you know what's coming and you still can't stop it. I mean, for years we talk about Gronk in the red zone, Gronk in the red zone, double team him, jam him at the line of scrimmage, and he'd still score. And these defensive coordinators have no idea how imposing he is until you actually play him. And even in a limited role, as D-Wood talked about all the other weapons Tampa Bay has, he is going to be a force multiplier and a point scorer. And if you're a fantasy football player, draft Gronk early, because he's going to score a lot of touchdowns, even if he's not the same old player he once was.
That's fascinating to me, Mike, because as I mentioned in the piece, Brady has thrown twice as many touchdowns to Gronk as he did to any other player. But with the array of weapons, that might be the best tight end room in the league. They got three legitimate tight ends there. You still think he puts up fantasy numbers?
Yeah, I do. And I know there's that old axiom that not only is he going to have production, but he's going to create it for others because he's going to be double team. But I think at the end of the day, Tom Brady, that's his security blanket, and he will throw Gronk open. He will have Gronk draw penalties. And I just, again, so many years of scar tissue, even when you know it's coming and you can't stop it, there's nothing more frustrating or disheartening. And when the rubber meets the road and Tom Brady has to make a key throw, and I know he wasn't the same in the pocket last year, I think the ball is going to go to Gronk and they're going to run it until someone can stop it.
D-Wood, Bucks or Saints in the NFC South?
I'm going to lean with the Saints. You know, they have the continuity, personnel, head coach, quarterback combination, but it's going to be a highly competitive division. Right. Because once they get that chemistry going, watch out.
Diana, I saw you shake, you sort of nodding your head along with that. You agree with that?
Yeah, I'm going to take Dee's thought on that. I liked what Mike said, though, about Gronk being that security blanket, because I remember having conversations with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers before they signed Gronk, and there were some rumors out there, but it seemed so ridiculous at the time. And I remember someone telling me there that it was Tom Brady telling them, I need this guy. I need Gronk. Not everyone on that staff was sold on bringing Gronk in. But because Tom Brady's desire to have that comfort, to know, to have that player out there that he's had so much success with, it was an easy move for them.
I'm on record. They are going to win the division. They're going to win the Super Bowl. And my picks, as we all know, are never wrong. All right, as we continue this morning on Get Up, as Zion gets ready to return to the court, he also has concerns about being in court. We will explain that in just a few moments. And then Patrick Mahomes speaking yesterday and explaining why he felt it was important to use his voice on the issues of social justice. You'll hear that as we continue. This is Get Up on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
We are back on Get Up, and attorneys representing Gina Ford, who was the former marketing manager for Zion Williamson, have asked a federal judge in North Carolina to deny his motion for partial judgment and thus allow them to conduct discovery into Williamson's parents' living arrangements and financial history before and during his time at Duke. We've been following this a little and always with the help of our legal analyst extraordinaire and our friend Ryan Smith. Ryan, thank you. Can you interpret this latest for the layperson? What is at stake here?
Yeah, what's at stake is he's ramping up the legal stakes. And here's what it is. It's the perspective of the possibility of Zion, Coach K, his parents, and others testifying in millions of dollars at stake. Here's what she's trying to say. Zion essentially is trying to say, we never had a contract with her. There are things she didn't have in the contract, like saying my eligibility is at risk if I sign with you, therefore it never existed. She is saying, look, that wouldn't even matter because he was never really a student athlete because he was doing things that would have made him ineligible. So she's trying to get discovery on those matters to try to prove her point. And all of that would involve trying to get testimony from Zion, Coach K, and others.
So there's money involved. We all understand that. But I think for most sports fans, this is something bigger than other people's money. This is, I suppose, about the reputation of one of the most beloved and successful coaches in the history of American sports. So, Brian, how strong is the evidence that links Coach K to anything in this?
You know, Greeny, at this stage, that's part of the problem. Where's the evidence? What you have in this so far is that Ford's team is talking about how Coach K had discussions with Zion about setting him up for his career with his work, with what he does at Duke. So I don't know if that's really something that you can take to a judge and say he might have passed along an improper benefit. She also claims in this lawsuit that Zion, essentially, his family went from living in a place in South Carolina for less than $1,000 a month rent to moving to Duke and living in a place for that was worth almost $1 million after he signed with Duke. So those things to the layman might sound like, hey, where there's smoke, there's fire. But in a courtroom, that might not be enough to force Coach K to come in and answer questions about eligibility and whether he gave an improper benefit.
So, Ryan, from your experience, what is the likeliest outcome here?
Yeah, I think the big question becomes, will Zion and Coach K have to testify? And I think right now, that is not as likely as it seems. It's not impossible. Ford's team is going to argue tooth and nail that this is necessary to prove our case. This is what we have to do. But Zion's team is going to say, look, this is all irrelevant. It's all designed to embarrass Zion. It's scandalous. Same with Coach K. And therefore, none of it should come in. It's all designed to push for a settlement. So I think I would not be surprised at the end of the day if all of this ended in a settlement. But right now, Ford's team's goal is, let me see if I can get these people to talk on the record, because that could change everything in this case.
All right, Ryan, we'll keep leaning on you for the insight here, and we'll see where it goes. Thank you very much, my man. Have a great rest of the day.
Sure thing.
Let me go then to the NBA, where the league and the players are still working toward finalizing plans for a return in the bubble at the Wide World of Sports in Orlando. Earlier this morning, Woj told us that there was a group of players who were concerned about the restart of the season. Here's some of that.
I think largely, players in the last week or so have really gotten a better sense of what living in a bubble and playing in a bubble, you know, what it will include and how limiting it is, how restrictive, how isolating it will be. This is a concern for the league, and I'm told that they're going to have a mechanism in the agreement that they announce that would allow players who don't want to play to stay home.
That was just a little bit of that conversation. Here is the one and only Jalen Rose. Jay, you heard of that part of that, and obviously Woj was reporting this all yesterday. Should we be concerned that a whole lot of players are not going to come back and play when they restart?
Be concerned. And as if you watch this show, you've heard me say multiple days, we need to stop treating athletes and NBA players like they're essential workers. These are really talented and skilled basketball players that made it to the ultimate level. 80% of the season has already been decided. They've already given 25% of their paychecks back to the NBA. So therefore, if you play for the Lakers or the Clippers or the Bucks, you want to find a way to resume the season because you have a legit chance to be a contender to win a championship. If your team's 17 through 22, you don't truly have the motivation because you know you're not going to win a championship, yet you're going to have to make all of the sacrifices that everybody else is going to have to do, like be in a bubble 6 or 7 weeks initially to play 8 regular season games without being with your significant others.
Yeah, but that was being sort of isolated from everyone and them isolated from you. And at this very particular moment in American history, not just pertaining to the coronavirus, but obviously to other issues as well. We had Matt Barnes yesterday on Jalen. We were talking with him about how he has heard from some players that they have concerns about going back to play during this time of protest and all of that. How much of a factor do you think that is here? What are you hearing?
I think it's a major factor because one of the most famous and iconic moments in the history of sports never took place on the field or the court, and that was the Ali Summit. That was the press conference where he was there with Bill Russell, Jim Brown, and Lew Alcindor, who became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And then you saw Tommy Smith and John Carlos post-gold medal ceremony at the Olympics. You saw Colin Kaepernick on the field pregame. So there are a lot of different ways to express yourself. And now I believe with social media, you can have the same activism without necessarily having a game, especially if it's going to be in the bubble. But again, I want everybody to know something. The essential workers, doctors and nurses, they are willing to sacrifice their health to make sure that we're better. Don't believe when you go to the supermarket or when you go to UPS, that person is just happy to be at work risking their life. They're doing it because they need to pay their bills. That's the opposite of an NBA player. These are multimillionaires. Why risk your health when you already live in the suburbs and you have money in the bank and you can play to another day and play to another season? So there will be players, a ton of them, hesitant to go play in the bubble. These rosters will not mirror a lot of ways what they mirrored when the season stopped.
That's a really interesting perspective on this. And we will wait. Look, let's wait and see. Woj will have much more reporting on as we go. Jalen, we're coming back to you in just a couple of minutes. Thank you, my man. Sit tight as we continue here. Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goff spoke about the Black Lives Matter movement yesterday. We'll tell you why it was so important for them both next.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
And good morning to those of you just joining us here. I'm Mike Greenberg in Bristol. This is Get Up on ESPN on at a special time this morning. If you're tuning in to see First Take, they will be with you in their entirety for a full 2 hours starting at 11 o'clock Eastern time here on ESPN. But we have huge news from the world of sports yesterday that reverberated well beyond sports. NASCAR banning the Confederate flag from all of its races and venues just days after Bubba Wallace, NASCAR's lone black driver, said there was, quote, no place for them in the sport. NASCAR released this statement, quote, "The presence of the Confederate flag at NASCAR events runs contrary to our commitment to providing a welcoming and inclusive environment for all our fans, our competitors, and our industry. Bringing people together around a love for racing and the community that it creates is what makes our fans and sport special. The display of the Confederate flag will be prohibited from all NASCAR events and properties." Here was Wallace's reaction to the news before the race last night.
What's your take on the announcement that took place a little while ago from NASCAR?
Sir, bravo. Props to NASCAR and everybody involved. That was a huge pivotal moment for the sport. A lot of backlash, but it creates doors and allows the community to come together as one. And that's what the real mission is here. So I'm excited about that and just going to keep going on tonight. We were told by my tire guy to run that part of the car into people, get them out of the way. We're showing a lot of compassion, love, and understanding, though, while we do it.
LeBron James most certainly took notice there, and you see the post that he put up there with a big shout-out to Bubba Wallace, and he was one of many who did so. Our Marty Smith was on Get Up with us earlier this morning. Here were some of his thoughts.
It seems like a swift and shocking decision. I was not shocked. I would have been a couple of years ago, Greeny. I was not now, and it's because of that convergence of variables and someone like Bubba who has opened himself up that way, who has put an entire sport and a culture on his shoulders and become the face of change that was necessary in NASCAR.
Here was some other reaction. This is from Ray Ciccarelli, who is a driver in NASCAR Trucks Series, posted this on Facebook. Well, it's been a fun ride and dream come true, but if this is the direction NASCAR is headed, we will not participate after 2020 season is over. I don't believe in kneeling during anthem nor taking people right to fly whatever flag they love. I could care less about the Confederate flag, but there are people that do, and it doesn't make them a racist. All you are doing is, as you can see there, effing one group to cater to another, and I ain't spend the money we are to participate in any political BS, so everything is for sale. So there's that. Here is Paul Feinbaum with us here. And, Paul, I know you covered this sport of NASCAR a very long time ago and have been around it for quite some time. How would you describe the significance of this decision yesterday to ban the Confederate flag at NASCAR events?
This is a watershed moment, Greeny, one I didn't think was ever going to happen. And I base that more on the past than what Marty was referring to in relation to contemporary times. When I started covering the sport in the 80s, NASCAR was a segregated sport. In fact, the only place you could perhaps find in the South more segregated than a NASCAR track was a Klan meeting. It was that bad. And there was never any effort to change. I did stories in the 90s interviewing NASCAR officials, those who would even talk. And they had no interest because they had a middle-class white audience they catered to, and appealing to anyone else was verboten to them. They didn't care. They had no interest in it whatsoever. The sport has evolved. What I think happened yesterday was a reaction. It was an intelligent reaction by new leadership in NASCAR, the grandchildren of those who I think look the other way. And it's a positive statement. What it will mean, I'm not really sure. I still think you'll see Confederate flags. I don't think law enforcement are going to want to encounter. But from a symbolic standpoint, it's perhaps the most important statement I have seen from NASCAR in my lifetime.
Radio talk shows are one of, to me, the most interesting places to gauge people's reaction to things. You host one of the most popular sports talk shows in the country, and it is right there in the southeast part of the country where this is obviously such an incredibly important sport. What were your callers saying yesterday?
The story broke toward the end of the show. There was a little pushback late, and I expect more today. Southerners aren't in for political correctness in their mind. This is more than political correctness, Greeny. This is a social movement that has been long overdue and incredibly necessary. So I think you'll see more of what we saw from the truck driver, the truck racer a minute ago in that statement. NASCAR's in trouble anyway. The ratings and the attendance for the sport have been declining, and primarily because the sport has expanded. It's tried to go to Chicago. It's tried to go to Vegas. It's tried to get outside the Rockingham, Darlington, Talladega circle that it was built off of. And I think the sport will continue to struggle because of this and because of a resistance from its core audience.
I can't ask you to speak for everyone, but Marty Smith, I thought, said something in my conversation with him earlier that I really liked. He said, for people who will push back on this, the response maybe is, NASCAR is not trying to close the door on you or anyone. They're trying to open it to everyone. Do you think that is a message that will be taken by the people you're talking about?
Sadly, no, I don't. And you know, Marty's much closer to the sport today than I am. Or maybe I just have too many uncomfortable memories of going to NASCAR events and seeing that flag and hearing the N-word thrown around by people in the infield and the grandstand as if it were just another phrase talking about who was going to take the checkered flag. We live in a different world in 2020, but I still don't think NASCAR, outside of this statement, has really tried to be that inclusive. And I don't think a lot of people are going to gravitate or migrate to the sport because of what the governing body announced yesterday.
For those of you who weren't with us earlier, Damian Woody, who grew up right near the racetrack in Richmond, talked about how important this was to him, that he attended NASCAR races as a child and seeing those flags and the way that it made him feel and just what a big day this was for him yesterday. It's a very important story. Paul, thank you very much for your perspective on this. I will see you
thank
later.
You,
I want to include here now from a football standpoint, because all these are intertwined, quarterbacks around the NFL continuing to speak up for social justice, among them Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goff yesterday. Mahomes first, speaking about his role in the video message that players sent to the league last week.
I believe in both my statement and the video that I made that it that stuff needed to be said. We needed to come together as a group, as players, and show that we believe that Black Lives Matter, and that we believe that this needs to be informed, and we need to be the role models to go out there and take that step. And I've talked to Roger Goodell, and he has shown his support to us. And we think that's the first step, but we want to make sure that it leads to action and it leads to different things that we can go out in the community and do to make the world a better place.
As a white person, as a white athlete, you know, you have an idea it's happening, but it truly doesn't hit you the way it does until something like this happens. And I think for us to be able to speak out and to make a stand, it can change things, and it's important. And I think you've seen a lot of guys from across the league do it, and I'm no different. I want to be a part of that change and a part of that action that's going to be taking place.
Well, let's talk about this here. And we are pleased to be joined by Dominic Foxworth, his first time with us this morning, and Jalen and Desmond are with us as we continue. But, Nick, I'll start with you there. Let's start with Goff. In your mind, what is the significance of Jared Goff making the statement he did yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's significant. And any time the white players step up and they've been doing it more often, it matters. And Jared Goff is on the young end, so I'm happy that he's doing it now. And maybe he didn't feel confident enough, or I guess wasn't in the league initially when some of this stuff started happening. And the same thing could be said for Mahomes. And Mahomes is black, so I think there's different expectations, or there should be different expectations for black players and white players. I don't necessarily think the black players should feel the obligation that they do to fix the problems that they didn't create. But I do think that it's important to understand that all these players now, these white players that are stepping up from Tom Brady to Aaron Rodgers to Matt Ryan, these guys are stepping up now when it's safe. So while I do appreciate what they're doing, I'm super grateful, and I do think it has some value. I think it's important to understand that you show what you believe in and you show what you care about by sacrificing. And they aren't sacrificing anything now. Right now, it is safe. Where were they in 2016 when we needed them, when Colin needed them? Where were they in 2017, 2018, 2019, when we needed them to stand up for Colin at that point? We needed them to stand up for black people in this country at that point. Megan Rapinoe was doing it. I don't know why they weren't. So, I don't want to scare them off. I'm happy that they're here. But they were quiet as church mice back then. And now, all of a sudden, they want to roar like lions when everyone is like, hey, it's okay. It's safe now. So, that has much less value. I hope that they mean what they say. And they show us that they mean what they say by taking a step further, by actually sacrificing something, by actually taking some risk and putting themselves out there to address the issues that they suddenly believe in.
Jalen?
I agree with Dominique. And also, while it's very refreshing for people to look back at their change of, look back at how they felt about a situation in the past and have a change of mind, there are a lot of people who frowned when slavery ended, when three-fifths of a man ended, when there were talks of reparations, when affirmative action became something that was being discussed. There were people that frowned about Colin having the nerve to take a knee during the national anthem. And his 1,300 or so NFL comrades, I appreciate now, like Dominique just said, that they have the courage that they can stand on the shoulders of giants and not have to worry about this season when hundreds of people are taking a knee, when at first it was two, then it was like 15. The reason why they're able to do it now, they feel emboldened, they feel powerful, and they understand, frankly, they won't lose sponsorships. And so when you now go to an NFL game, you will see fans also taking a knee. So the movement has been co-opted. It has become mainstream, and I'm happily that it is. I love to see white folks carrying signs to say Black Lives Matter, because that's going to get us closer to our goals. But at the same time, these are players. You know who I want to hear from, Neek and Dez? We're the coaches. We're the GMs. We're the owners. How about that? If you really want to get systematic change, it starts with the power. And if the owners really believed in what the players were saying, they would have did their version of a video like that. And don't ignore two words, Black Lives Matter, when you do it. And don't ignore I Can't Breathe. Don't ignore those statements if you decide to do one.
I will point out, I think we have seen some coaches
that have been involved here. Yeah, Nick, help me with this. Dan Quinn, I remember seeing in a march, head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. Vic Fangio, after his initial comments, led some Broncos players.
There's a reason why you can name the six or seven people out of the 250 people available.
It's fair.
And of the ownership class that you brought up, like, there's been a couple very benign comments that feel like something a youngster could write about unity and stuff, and most of the other owners have remained quiet. And I've noticed that it seems like in Diana's report earlier, it seems like a lot of the other owners are trying to throw Jerry Jones out there as a sacrificial lamb, as a scapegoat, and say, well, he's the one we follow. We're waiting for him, because they want us all to attack him and keep saying his name as if they aren't powerful enough to stand on their own. Because I promise you, they stand on their own and fight him when it comes to money issues, when it comes the things that are impacting, when it comes to revenue sharing, when it comes to the Cowboys making a ton of money and some of these small market teams wanting them to pay some of that revenue sharing. I guarantee you they're not following his lead at that point. So all of a sudden, we're not going to fall for that racism play action that you're running right now, where you think we're all going to chase Jerry Jones. All of you are accountable, and all of you should speak up, and your silence speaks volumes.
Desmond?
Sorry, Des.
Go ahead, Desmond.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. They just, no, Dominique hit it on the head, because it's safe right now. I mean, the black athlete has had to shoulder this burden for far too long. When you think about Jesse Owens and Jalen mentioned it earlier, John Carlos and Tommy Smith, Muhammad Ali, the big meeting they had with Jim Brown and Muhammad Ali and Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and then Colin Kaepernick. The black athletes had to shoulder this burden for far too long. So it is refreshing. It's heartening to see now these white quarterbacks start to speak out and try to make it seem like now they understand what the issues are and they want to be a part of the change. But like Dominique said, what they did is they took their cue from Roger Goodell. See, once Roger Goodell released that video that he did, then now it became safer for a lot of these white quarterbacks and any other positions who want to speak out, to speak out on these issues. I'm very happy now that's just not black athletes on the front line, black athletes making these statements. It's great to have other allies in this fight and this struggle. And I hope now that their words, that they just transfer into actions, into deeds that can help this cause, because black lives really do matter.
Again, I don't want to scare them off necessarily, but they are not on the front lines. Like, the front lines already happened. The soldiers that ran out there that took those shots have already come, and then they're coming in at the end wanting to wave the flag as if they contributed to this. So I, again, don't want to scare them off. What they did and what they're doing is minor, but it is valuable. And I do expect and hope that they'll do more. They'll take a step further and push us forward in this issue. And I do think that the all the names you brought up of people who have kind of paved the way, those people have paid the price so that I think that you can have this opportunity. And NFL quarterbacks are, talk about privilege, they are a protected class, both literally and figuratively. So why don't you extend some of that protection to other people? You can make demands as a group or individually for the things that you'd like to see before you'd be willing to come back. Thank you.
It's well said, guys. We'll leave it there for the moment. We have more things we want to do, but it's an important day, and these are important conversations, and I appreciate very much everybody's candor. We'll continue in a moment here. We'll talk about Reggie Bush. He was welcomed back to the USC family yesterday after years of distance. What does it mean to athletes when their schools disagree? Jalen would know. He'll talk about it next.
With thousands of locally owned Napa stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
We are back on Get Up, and for the first time in a very long time, I have a highlight to show you. The PGA Tour is back on the course today at Colonial with a very good field, and this morning, very significantly, at 8:46 a.m. local time, a moment of silence around the course was held in remembrance of George Floyd, and it was very emotional for all who were there, from what I'm told. Meanwhile, to the action of the day, and Phil Mickelson is leading what is a very deep and good field, and here he is hitting his first shot of the day on number 10. He starts well, knocking that one right out into the middle of the fairway with the sunglasses and the signature coffee. We'll check on Mickelson in a minute. The hottest start of the day belongs to Justin Rose, another very big name and off to a very good start. This was his first hole of the day, and he's from just off the green, and he knocks that one in. Go to one under. 3 holes later, he was at 2 under already, and he's putting for Bird, and he will knock this down. And so it was Rose 3 under through 4 to begin his day, and we'll pop a very quick leaderboard up for you here and take a look at where they stand. Justin Rose among the leaders. Again, Phil Mickelson starting well. The full telecast comes your way later today on Golf Channel. All right, Reggie Bush was one of the most electrifying college football players ever in 2005. He led the nation, averaging 222 all-purpose yards per game, his 19 touchdowns also contributing to what was a season in which he would sweep almost all of the major college football awards, including the Heisman. He was the second straight USC player. See him there hugging his quarterback, Matt Leinart, in that shot. He had won it the year before. And then in 2010, the NCAA forced USC to vacate its 2004 national title when it found out Bush accepted impermissible benefits from marketing agents. USC also got a 2-year postseason ban. Bush gave back his Heisman under pressure. The school was also ordered to permanently disassociate from Bush. That was later changed to a 10-year ban, which expired yesterday. And so here's a little bit of a letter to Reggie Bush from the president of USC. I am pleased to inform you that all restrictions and prohibitions on your involvement in our athletics program are officially removed, and you will be afforded the privileges and courtesies extended to all Trojan football alumni. So here was Reggie yesterday reflecting on his time at USC.
Once you leave and then you start to really understand what college football is all about, then that's where you go back and you say, okay, you know, there was a big significant injustice that happened here. Not just to me, but to everybody that came through the college system. Because, again, as I said before, in no way, shape, or form is it okay to tell a young kid when he's in his prime, you can't make money off your name, image, and likeness, but this big-time corporation can.
Jalen is back with us, and Jay Billis joins us for the first time this morning. Jay, thank you. But Jalen, obviously we start with you. After your experiences with the Fab Five at Michigan and all the things that happened in the wake of that, what is your reaction to all this?
It's like being disowned by your family in a lot of ways. Imagine, Greeny, if you got an email or was sent a letter that you weren't welcome at Northwestern. You went there, you support their programs, donate there, all of that. You stand on the table for them. And then they told you that you weren't welcome. There was a period of time, and I have to say this for everybody out there watching. If you think what Reggie Bush, Chris Webber, were accused of is the same as somebody like Lance Armstrong, then I just don't know what to tell you. And here's what I'll say. Name, image, and likeness was illegal to profit off of in the early 90s. It's going to be legal in the 2020s. It's going to be legal. We're going to look at it different. Those players won't be punishment. Punished. It reminds me of marijuana. The same way it was legislated to put a lot of people in jail, it's the same thing. Now it's not seen as so taboo because it's legal in so many places. So I'm happy for Reggie that he gets a chance to be welcomed in a place that he accomplished so very much, won a championship, won a Heisman Trophy, put on for the university, helped allow other people to follow in their footsteps. And Jay, I'll tell you this, a terrific football team or basketball team, it doesn't just affect your budget. It also affects your enrollment. Students now want to come to your school based on the success of the athletic programs. So absolutely, this is a good move, and I'm glad that his disassociation ended because it was stupid anyway.
Jay?
Well, I agree with everything that Jalen said. I think that disassociation is a horrible sanction that the NCAA uses. I think it's cruel. I don't think it's effective in any way. I mean, the reason that you sanction is for retribution, to punish, and for deterrence so that others will get the message and hopefully not do the similar thing in the future. It's not an effective sanction. It just doesn't work. Look at where we are all these years after that. But think about this for a second. The NCAA Committee on Infractions, led by, at that time, Miami Athletic Director Paul D., one of the great hypocrites in the history of the NCAA, permanently disassociated Reggie Bush from the University of Southern California. That's just awful. I think that's awful. And look at the message that sends They're basically saying, well, these are kids. They're just kids. When we talk about paying them, well, they're just kids. They're kids going to college. But a rule gets violated, and now all of a sudden they're adults, and they pay a permanent price. And Jalen Greene, think about this one for a second. Like, I'm not a big fan of vacating wins either, but it's interesting. When USC was made to vacate those wins, their opponents are not allowed to vacate the losses. So USC could fix this in 2 seconds by, in all their records, don't reference wins. Just reference that 1 year we had zero losses and our opponents had 13 losses. They'd never have to vacate anything. And that's true, that you're not allowed to vacate those losses. So every game that USC played and won, their opponents have kept those losses. That's how ridiculous this is. And one last thing, Bob Knight had a great thing that he said about Pete Rose when people were saying Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame. He said, look, this is easy. They gave him a lifetime ban. The day after he dies, put him in the Hall of Fame. Hmm. You know, and it's the same thing here. How could they possibly say you are permanently disassociated from where you went to school, where you played, and where they exploited you for millions upon millions of dollars? That was just awful, and there should never be another disassociation, period.
I agree. I went yelling and screaming about this earlier this morning. I'm not going to do that again. But some of the language involved, Jalen, is galling. I mean, you were ordered to permanently disassociate yourself from a human being like he committed, like, you know, high crimes and misdemeanors at maximum. He was charged of taking, he was accused of taking some money that we have deemed in inappropriate fashion. You're treating him like he killed somebody. And even the letter from yesterday, Jalen, I am pleased to inform you that all restrictions and prohibitions on your involvement are officially removed. Oh, I he should be so grateful and thankful. I find this all galling. I know that we have more important things going on in the world right now, Jalen, but this really rubbed me the wrong way.
As it should. And we've talked for years, and I use the term indentured servitude as it related to athletes in a relationship with the NCAA, in particular, sports, football, and basketball. They want to try to make sure they profit off of those athletes by all means necessary, to the point now they're trying to figure a way to play football when students aren't on campus going to school so they can supplement the budgets. But then we call this amateurism. And then lastly, I ain't gonna even name all of the coaches. You can Google them. What about all of the coaches that have been sanctioned and punished for doing things that were improper to their programs? You know what they do? Still get their check, keep their job, or get another job, and usually keep those jobs for decades and not ostracized like the players have been.
Yes, they're very rarely permanently disassociated from anything. Super quickly, Jay, should he get his Heisman back? We talked about this with Desmond earlier. There's a little bit of a different circumstance there. Should he get his Heisman back?
I believe he should. I think there's a point where we say enough is enough, and I think we reached that a long time ago. What I would say to the Heisman trophy, hey, do whatever you want with your trophy, but if you can look up on that list of Heisman winners and say they were all eligible, then don't give it back to them. But they know they can't say that. They weren't all eligible.
Really well said. Yes. So give him back his thing and the Heisman. And I'm glad that he's no longer disassociated, which I didn't even know was a thing until we started reading about all of this. And candidly, it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Jay, thank you both, guys. We'll see you later. Jalen, we'll see you for J&J this afternoon. Tomorrow morning, or actually this is this evening, the Major League Baseball draft. It continues later today on ESPN2. Carl Ravitch hosts our coverage of rounds 2 through 5, starting at 5 Eastern on ESPN2 and on the ESPN app. Meanwhile, coming up here on First Take, NASCAR making a huge decision yesterday to ban the Confederate flag from their races. Just how important is this? First Take will discuss. They follow us in just 5 minutes here on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Disney Plus. All of your favorites all in one place. Sign up today. We get ready to wrap up Get Up here. Came on late this morning, and we will be following Korea Baseball Organization action again tomorrow morning. The Wiz and the Lions coming your way, 5:25 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN with Get Up and First Take immediately to follow. Quickly again to live golf action. They are playing at Colonial, the Charles Schwab Challenge. Phil Mickelson looking very stylish in the sunglasses. Here he is on 17. He's about $163 away. This is second shot on the par 4. Look at this. And fascinating to hear no applause, right? No reaction whatsoever. There are no galleries. There are no fans who are there. The full telecast will be available Later this afternoon on Golf Channel, I will most certainly be watching some of that today. And you see Mickelson is off to a good start today. Justin Rose also, you see him there amongst the leaders. Johnny Vegas is up there. Bryson DeChambeau, who is just drilling the ball off the tee, hitting everything about 370, is also off to a good start. So we'll keep an eye on all of that golf for you as the day goes on. Again, it'll be on Golf Channel a little later. It is a very busy and very impactful time in our world of sports. We're proud to be able to bring it to you every morning. We'll do it again tomorrow. We'll see you here. First Take continues the conversation right now.